you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, it's the Scott Horton Show. I'm him, and the website is scotthorton.org. You can find all the archives there, 4,000-something interviews, almost all on foreign policy stuff, you know, scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, introducing Grant F. Smith. He's the director of the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. The Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, and he's the author of the book Big Israel, and I already know that he forgives me for not having read it yet because I just don't have time to do that yet, but I'm going to read it and interview him all about it in probably like 6 months. But you should read it, and you should also read all the rest of his books. And if you look at Grant Smith's Amazon page, you'll say, wow, has this guy written a lot of stuff about the crimes of the Israel lobby in the United States of America. I think you will be very impressed. And I think also if you just want to be blown away, search site earmep.org for the search term .pdf. Just see what you get there. It's the Institute for Research. All right. Welcome back to the show, Grant. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me on again, Scott.
You are
forgiven for not reading Big Israel.
I can't wait to read it, but I have to wait to read it. That's all.
That's fine.
Is the only reason.
Okay, just as long as not too many people take that approach, I'm okay.
Yeah, no, the rest of you, read it. Unless you also are writing a book about the entire war on terrorism and can't quite fit it into your schedule. But otherwise, yeah. Look, that I have the best excuse. I have the only excuse in
the
world.
That is the only excuse, yeah.
For not reading Big Israel right now. But I promise I'm going to read it because I really, really want to read it.
You get a permission slip.
Yeah. So, and the rest of you. Go and read Big Israel. This is the guy who knows the most about the Israel lobby. All right, so now you are suing the U.S. government, saying that they have to stop giving aid to Israel right at a time when aid to Israel is increasing from $3 billion a year, as they say, to $5 billion. I don't know if you want to adjust those numbers or anything like that, but right as this hugest increase is taking place, and the Americans, who I think we already pay for a majority of the Israelis' military budget, are paying even more of it, you're saying that it's illegal to give aid to Israel, Grant?
Well, we're talking about foreign aid, and we do actually have, you know, the 1961 Foreign Assistance Act, which, you know, forms the basis for the legality and procedures around delivering aid. So the lawsuit is really all about, as you say, both the final installment, which will probably happen in August. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of rush going on in terms of, you know, getting something in place in this month so that in October, the disbursement of the final, you know, sort of MOU that was written up in the Bush administration is given over. But, you know, kind of the big enchiladas is giant. It could be up to $5 billion, as you say, per year. New MOU, which Obama's signing into law and then basically passing on to whoever wins the election. So what we've done is filed a lawsuit in federal court, and it's really all 135 pages of it. If you want to read about it, it's at irmep.org/CFP. It's really all about amendments that have been made to the Foreign Assistance Act, which really prohibit any sort of assistance to clandestine nuclear states.
All right. Well, and so now, yeah, the thing about that is that nuclear ambiguity, that policy where everybody pretends that they don't know that Israel has nuclear weapons, it's been broken so many times, deliberately and otherwise. It's really not a secret at all here. I mean, I know that, you know, federal employees are not allowed to talk about it. It's,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. It's a rule. But right. No one in the world denies that they have nuclear weapons. Everybody knows they have nuclear weapons.
Right. The amount of information in the public domain, whether it was Mordecai Vanunu, you know, smuggling out photos of the inside workings of Dimona, Seymour Hersh with his book, The Samson Option, Avner Cohen with Israel and the Bomb. And, you know, Avner Cohen is the guy who's really done all of the core research on the so-called nuclear opacity, nuclear ambiguity, strategic ambiguity, whatever you want to call it. We're just calling it nuclear ambiguity. Jimmy Carter in 2008 saying Israel has 150 nuclear weapons. I mean, who better would know that than a former president?
The U.S. Air Force did a study too, right?
Well, it was a U.S. Air Force analyst and published under the auspices of the U.S. Air Force. But yeah, he also did a study. And, you know, Roger Mattson, Stealing the Bomb, a book published this year, all about the NUMEC incident. So yeah, the evidence is overwhelming. To the extent that it makes, you know, this plausible deniability a farce. And what we're trying to show in this lawsuit is that that has had very grave consequences and is in fact a violation of the law in and of itself.
Well, now, is this the kind of thing where if the judge ruled in your favor, Obama could just sign some waiver and it wouldn't matter anyway?
Well, it's not quite that simple. So if we were to get some sort of injunction, then it would be in the Obama administration's court and probably even more important, Congress, to do what they've done in the past. They've already watered down the Symington and Glenn portions of foreign assistance. 1985, they kind of moved the date of transfers of nuclear technologies that could make it illegal for Israel to have done it. So they've already watered it down in the past. But what they would have to do is, from a legal standpoint, change the section of law where the Foreign Assistance Act, where the Symington and Glenn amendments currently reside. And it would be complicated. It would look bad. It would probably be reported on. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to say they would do that. But the other thing that could happen, as you say, under Symington and Glenn, Obama, President Obama, could in fact issue a waiver for Israel. And he's never done that. No president has ever done that since the amendment went into effect. And the waiver could state explicitly why it is in the U.S. national security interest to give Israel aid, even though the United States knows that it has nuclear weapons.
Right.
So we've done that for Pakistan, done that for India during the Clinton administration, but they don't want to do that. They want, again, to pretend that there's no problem. And that is one of the core issues of the lawsuit is, you know, performing your duty and acting upon information, not only in the public domain, but which is readily accessible to any president for sure.
Right. And now, you know, I don't know, man, I guess back in the 80s or maybe, yeah, would have just been in the 80s, maybe in the 70s, the Israelis proliferated some nuclear weapons technology to South Africa, that kind of thing. But at this point, why wouldn't they just sign the non-proliferation treaty? And, or at least, why should it be so hard for the Americans to say, okay, go ahead and just confess you have them and sign the NPT? What difference does it really make?
It makes a huge amount of difference to the Israelis, I would say, from the U.S. standpoint. And it appears that even President Obama had that same initial feeling when he came into office, but
I was going to say the administration actually somebody brought that up for a minute and then got shouted right down, right?
Yeah, that is the history. They felt that there should in fact be signatories to it, but you're right, they got shouted down. Probably didn't know about all of this, all of the history of ambiguity since Richard Nixon and Golda Meir concocted it, if you want to put it that way. But, you know, if the Israelis were to really declare openly that they were a nuclear power and that they had X a number of weapons and that they were going to be inspected, just like any other under the International Atomic Energy Agency and be open about it. Their, position internally, again, according to Avner Cohen, who really looks at the Israeli side, I don't so much. I'm only really concerned about the U.S., compliance side, but, that it would really make their lives a little bit more difficult because, as they say, or as the experts say, the Israeli experts, they would have to justify why they should be the only nuclear power in the Middle East. And, you know, why shouldn't the Saudis, UAE, and other states that could certainly afford it, why shouldn't they go nuclear as well and have their own deterrence, the ultimate deterrence, which has been proven pretty much to be, you know, the best way to avoid, you know, a massive attack on your country. It hasn't stopped conventional wars, to be sure. But anyway, they don't want to deal with that issue. What I really argue in the lawsuits, and you might not be surprised by this, given the contents of the books you mentioned, and particularly Big Israel, is that we're really, on the U.S. side, there is no reason other than the fact that, you know, Israel wants the weapons that they would otherwise have to buy. They want the aviation fuel, you know, billions of dollars in that, which, you know, there's a lot of argument that these are providing high-tech jobs in the U.S., but if you're buying $1 billion worth of aviation fuel at $1.50 a gallon, I would argue that that's not a big deal, nor are the food and other things that they get under this. So Israel gets all of this. It allows Israel to really concentrate on building up its nuclear deterrent, whether it's submarines or whether it's new missile technology, laser enrichment, all of the things they're known to be doing. Here in the United States, you have this vast ecosystem of Israel affinity organization building up a funding base, doing the PR, hyping the Iran threat, funding, in some cases, through the Weizmann Institute of Science, actually funding Israel's nuclear weapons program with tax-deductible donations. And the other part of the circle is AIPAC, which aggregates all of this power. It lobbies for these aid packages, pressures Congress. And at the very top of this system are really elected officials who want all of this support. They want the related party campaign contributions, PAC contributions. And so they ignore all of this intel. They thwart all of sorts of inquiries for information about government policy and Israel's nukes. They violate export controls and they provide the aid. So you've got this vicious circle where taxpayers are really holding the bag for all of these activities. And arguably the most egregious activity are these elected officials who are pretty much committed to this policy because, just as Richard Nixon mentioned upon passing nuclear ambiguity, he didn't want to deal with all of these interest groups which might rise up in unison against him if he did anything like withhold fighter jets or do some other punishment in order to get them in line with nonproliferation. So, you know, unfortunately, this giant asterisk has made the U.S. kind of a laughingstock whenever it goes to NPT conferences and proclaims it's some sort of authority example and leader in nonproliferation. Everybody who knows anything says, well, what about the Israeli nuclear program?
Yeah.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
And, you know, it's extra infuriating, really, when you put it that way about how fungible all these dollars are and how we're, you know, the American people are being made to pay to lobby against their own interests and,
right,
and all
right.
This kind of thing, the way that that works. And, you know, calling all left wingers who are jealous and all right wingers who are pissed off, Israel has a socialist economy. America is paying, you know, they call it military aid, but you might as well say America is paying aid directly into Israel's free higher education system and their free healthcare, you know, government, not free, American paid, very expensive universal healthcare system. And why in the world should this very first world country with, you know, per capita, very high ranking GDP in the world, why should they be getting one dime from the American people, many of whom are actually dead broke, by the way? Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think, you know, the whole fungibility issue, although Symington, who was, you know, the guy who really promoted this and who was very much on board with nonproliferation, made the same point. He said, quote, if you wish to take the dangerous and costly steps necessary to achieve a nuclear weapons option, you cannot expect the United States to help underwrite that effort directly or indirectly, unquote. But he might as well have said, you know, if you want a subsidy, that allows you to do all sorts of things, you know, beyond building up, military capability, it's the same thing. If the U.S. were getting a subsidy of this size, you know, obviously it could do more, but you know, it's the situation is the reverse. But yeah, absolutely, fungibility is key here.
Yeah, as I don't know if it was Ron Paul who coined it, but he always liked to quote it anyway about foreign aid is just a transfer of wealth from poor people in rich countries to rich people in poor countries. In this case, rich people in rich countries. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I saw that quote. He had some incredible YouTube videos from 2008, and it's just he's said some absolutely fantastic things about this domain that are, I think they're all viral at this point.
Yeah, boy, I miss him these days. well, and you know, and his position on Israel always was that you know, we should just butt out, that we shouldn't be taking sides, that they're going to have to work it out for themselves. But he would also say that, you know, the Palestinians are being treated very unfairly, you know? You look right at what, you know, but he would stop and say, if you want my personal opinion, what's going right on over there? And look at what's going on in the Gaza Strip. It breaks your heart, you know? That was, a direct quote.
Yeah. Back in 1960, when the CIA was definitely in the business of giving advice about strategic issues in the Middle East, they said as well that if Israel goes nuclear, you can bet that it will feel ever less inclined and ever less pressure to have any sort of peaceful settlement with the Palestinians.
Yeah, or anybody else.
Yeah, and that is exactly what happened. So,
right.
You know, you don't have to rely on the CIA for that sort of basic analysis, but you can certainly rely on history since, you know, over the past 50, however many years plus, that it has come to pass.
Well, and who are they credibly deterring anyway? I mean, if their major hassle is Hezbollah on their northern border, they can't nuke them ever, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the fallout and everything, it's right there in their own neighborhood. And
right,
it hadn't really served as a deterrent when they invaded southern Lebanon in 2006. Hezbollah whooped on them, and I saw no indication Hezbollah was concerned that Israel was going to break out the nukes. They felt perfectly fine fighting them back.
Right. Seymour Hersh would argue that it's really about the Samson option, and I still think his analysis is the best.
All right, now explain that, because people don't know what that means.
Well, sure. The Samson option is just as Samson pulled down the pillars of the temple, which crashed down on the heads of everyone, that the Israelis have been in a position now for, you know, more of their history than not of being able to take the entire world with it, if it suffers any sort of existential or, you know, what it tells everybody would be an existential crisis. So, I think U.S. officials should talk a lot more about that fact and how it limits or, affects their ability to do anything in terms of the Middle East. But one prominent Israeli politician even once bragged that wherever an Israeli government official go, he essentially takes the Middle East with him in his pocket. And the ability of the Israelis, again, to sort of tell the world that if things are not going their way, that there is definitely a possibility that these horrible weapons might have to come out, is a major lever against countries that are far larger economically, far larger in terms of size, geographically, far more influential than Israel would ever be as a conventional power. So,
well, wait, I mean, to be specific, what you're saying is they're threatening to nuke Rome, Berlin, Paris, London, New York if they ever let Israel get in trouble.
That's the Samson option, in a nutshell.
And that's reported by Seymour Hersh, who wrote a whole book about it.
Right, but I mean, I think as Americans, we should hear what are the assessments from our intelligence agencies. What are their contingencies for a state that has that kind of doomsday mentality? What are they doing to mitigate that sort of risk? And, you know, for a long time, it was said that the Israelis were targeting mainly Russia as a pressure point during their whole effort to score more Soviet emigres to build up their own population. And, you know, the United States, when it was the sole nuclear power, certainly threw its weight around in the Soviet Union with threats. And so I think, you know, that is real power. But whether it's legitimate for the United States to continue to punish both federal employees and contractors and people who supposedly work for the American people, and researchers who want to know about these things, is the real question of our lawsuit. But I don't think, you know, anyone should learn to live with this sort of situation, just like nobody should accept and learn to live with the fact that, as you've done on many of your shows, and mentioned many times, that the Russians still have this enormous capability and the U.S. still has this enormous capability to wipe each other out. And yet we have, you know, nothing but saber rattling and hyperbolic rhetoric coming out. And it's just, it's something Americans really shouldn't stand for.
Yeah. And listen, I want to make sure to mention this as long as we're on this subject, because even though it is hearsay, I think it's the very best quality hearsay in the whole world. It's Daniel Ellsberg on this show, the famed whistleblower and brilliant genius, an anti-nuclear weapons activist. Daniel Ellsberg has told me repeatedly, and I've really followed up numerous times with, hey, you told me this before, but I just want to make sure that I got the number right. You say it again, and we've been over this and over this. And he says that Mordecai Vanunu, the Israeli nuclear weapons whistleblower, told him that Israel had 600 nuclear weapons, not 150 or 200, 600, and they included hydrogen bombs, thermonuclear weapons, presumably in the tens of megatons then.
I made up the megatons
part. Maybe they're very miniaturized H-bombs, but anyway, they certainly could be in the megatons if they're H-bombs.
Well, the Nunu is in a position to have known, and his information, what, is 30 years old now. But the 1987 DOD report we had released in 2015 certainly verifies that they had programs working on hydrogen bombs. So I would find that credible, and there have been lots of reports that they have tactical nuclear weapons. I would certainly like to hear credible information about all of this and why it exists and what the U.S. position is, but we're not able to get any of that. We have, again, what you say, the very best hearsay available.
Right.
But it's certainly an issue in the region as explosive as the Middle East, that the people should have much more information about it.
Yeah. And hey, it's the age of WikiLeaks. So for all the CIA people listening to this later, grow some balls and leak some docs. What the hell, you wimps?
Yeah. Well, I guess the problem is that nobody probably wants to be the next James Doyle, who wrote a very innocuous piece for a magazine, which stated as fact, the Israelis have nuclear weapons. Here's some strategic implications of that. And what happened to him? Is he still working at a national laboratory? No. He was treated like a criminal. He had his computer searched, his home searched. He was fired. And that's what happens to people who have the clearances to know about these sorts of things, who want to talk about it to the American people, particularly under this new gag order that we cite as the Obama administration's unique addition to nuclear ambiguity, a gag law called WPN 136, which is specifically to keep government officials and contractors fearful of ever talking about this. So that's why I believe you have people like Paul Pillar, who certainly had the clearances as a major top-level CIA official. Even when he writes about these things, he calls them Israel's kumquats. You know, he calls them, he uses euphemisms because there is a political decision to have passed a gag law that will severely prosecute any of these officials for doing it. And our argument in the lawsuit, what gives us standing to even go to court, is that this isn't just a threat to government officials. It actually impacts everybody who tries to get information about the functions of government. It actually thwarts the Freedom of Information Act, mandatory declassification reviews. All of our sunshine laws are being destroyed by this type of unlawful gag law.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, man, it's great work that you're doing, and I sure do appreciate that you do and make time to come on the show and talk with us about it.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me on again.
All right. See you, man. Appreciate it.
See ya.
All right, y'all. That is the great Grant F. Smith. He directs the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, IRMEP, I-R-M-E-P, IRMEP.org. And he's suing them on your behalf all the time. Check out his Amazon page. A ton of great books, including How They Stole Nuclear Weapons Material from the United States, the Israel Lobby, that is, and the Israeli spies. And Divert. And a bunch before that, too. But Divert, and then the latest one is called Big Israel, about the power of the Israeli lobby in the United States, the definitive book on the Israel lobby in the U.S. by the great Grant Smith there. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Superior blends of premium coffee. Roasted fresh in Zionsville, Indiana. Darren's Coffee satisfies the casual and the connoisseur. Scott Horton Show listeners, visit darrenscoffee.com and use the coupon code SCOTT at checkout for free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Because everyone deserves to drink great coffee.